Last year, I was asked to take over a role in a local theater production of Robert Bolt's A Man for All Seasons. The actor playing the role of Cromwell was unable to finish the last half of the run, and they needed someone to cover it. I learned the lines, and I finished out the show, and it ended up being a really great experience. But a couple weeks after the show had closed, it occurred to me that I couldn't remember the lines anymore. I had spent a few weeks learning that role, and then had a dozen or so performances, yet, with a few exceptions, after only a short time, I wasn't able to access what I had memorized. It made me wonder, are those lines still in my head somewhere? Learning something like that doesn't fit what I understand about short-term memory, but it obviously didn't stay with me for very long after the event was done. Where did all those words go? Would it be easier to memorize the lines if I had to do it again? How would the experience change if I revisited that role? You're listening to Dubious Scrapbooks, a show about how we think and how we manage the accumulation of our personal experience. I'm Jeff Myers. My guest, Jacqueline Antaramian, is a talented actress who has captivated audiences on both stage and screen. She's earned critical acclaim for her versatility and range as an actor, from her work in classical theater to her appearances on hit television shows such as American Gods and Homeland. She is an absolutely delightful person, and I've been very lucky to be able to call her my friend for many years. One of the reasons I wanted to talk to Jackie about this was because she's been asked to reprise more than a few roles over the course of her career. I was curious to know how returning to a role might change the process of learning, or in this case, relearning something previously put into memory. Here's what she had to say.
First of all, I love that. I love to reprise a role that I've already done. Obviously, something that I've enjoyed doing the first time. I was lucky enough to do Serafina twice in The Rose Tattoo. I was lucky enough to do Maria Callas in Masterclass a couple times. Olivia from Twelfth Night about four times. And it's interesting because, well, beyond the memory part of it, you just hope to find humanity, nuance, comedy, groundedness every time you do something, right? So, and the more you do it, the more you will find it, if you're honest with your endeavor to dive deeper into and not just be complacent, you know. So the fourth time I did Olivia, there were so many things I found that I couldn't at a younger age, first of all, find just because of how long I'd been on the planet. And there was also just more history with it, so that things I knew that had worked, and then I said, well, why do they have to be this way? I mean, they work, but maybe they can be better. Maybe they can be. And I would find more humor. I found more comedy. I'd have people say, I never knew she was such a funny character, and things like that. So that was, it was just a terrific experience. In terms of the memory part of it, the memorizing and knowing the lines faster, per se, for sure. You start, when you first begin, you're like, oh my gosh, how come I don't remember anything? But then you realize, no, I do. The mind palace, it had the door shut. And so it opens it up. And once you start going over those lines again, they just flow out. It's not that you memorize it right away, but it's much faster and much more nuanced. And then also you realize, oh, I was saying this in a certain musical way, in a cadence. Maybe that was because I was trying to memorize it. But now if I break it down, I don't need to say it that way. I don't need to, I can explore it better. I can explore it more.
For those not familiar with the concept of the door to the mind palace that Jackie mentioned, it's an ancient memorization technique that involves creating a mental image of a familiar place and then associating the information that you want to remember with specific locations. The mind palace technique is also known as the journey method, the memory palace, or the palace of loci. I first learned about this technique in Joshua Foer's book, Moonwalking with Einstein, which I highly recommend. In his book, he recounts his year-long quest to improve his memory with the help of some of the world's top mental athletes. We'll hear more from Jacqueline Antaramian right after the break.
With a masterclass with Maria Callas, I was fortunate enough to cover Time Daily at the Kennedy Center. A dear friend of mine directed it, Stephen Wadsworth, and he asked if I would cover it. And I said, so I was overwhelmed with the memorizing in the beginning. But the old adage, you know, you just keep on repeating it and repeating it and repeating it, and there's really no other way, right? But there's also that old adage of you say something 99 times and it's in your brain. It's not a scientific observation. I think it's just something somebody said and probably worked well. But it's true. You repeat it, you know, about 100 times or more. It's like music in the brain, the sounds, the language, the muscle memory. It's like when you learn an instrument when you're very young and you're hammered into learning it, and you go away and you go, like for me, for the piano, and you go back to it, I can read the music. That's in my brain. I don't play as well, maybe if I haven't practiced in years, but it's all there. And if I let my fingers do and not get my brain out of the way, my fingers have the muscle memory. So I think there's this whole beautiful symbiotic kind of muscle memory, language, that all is a part of learning a character as well. Then I got the chance to do it again, and it came very fast. It had been over a year, but it came very fast. Again, I think it's because I'd hammered it in my brain over and over out of fear, number one, that if you have to go on, you had better be on top of it. And then out of love, because it's such a great role. And then I just had it better in my head. And there was a time when someone asked me to do a monologue from it, and I picked it up, and within like 5 minutes, I had it rememorized. So I don't know what that is. It's because I did it so many times that it was easier to rememorize.
You know, you do both television and theatrical work. Is there a different process for that for you? Because I know that for television work, that has to be very different. There's not that... you probably don't have the same access to that type of blocking rehearsal and things. Is that a different process?
Yes. There are two absolutely different skill sets. And I have to say, I'm so grateful that I have had in my later years, especially, some beautiful TV things to dive into. Not like amazingly, like carrying any storyline, but a little bit, right? And I'm grateful for the work. It's, you know, obviously, it's a different game, but it, I don't feel that I've mastered that skill set quite yet. And I say quite yet, because I'm always striving for better and better, knowing that you can never reach anything, whether theater or film, as perfection, as it were. But you always must try to endeavor to get more honest, more challenged, more ground, you know, all those things that when you see a film, when you see a TV show and you see an actor who just knocks your socks off, that's hard work to have that kind of focus and dedication to making the role work. So in the memorizing of, I find that I have a better skill set at theater. I have more history with it. I love language. I love using my voice. I love using my emotions. And what I really love about theater is that knowing that every performance, there's going to be hit and misses of how the story is being told and how you're reaching an audience and all that, you know, you have tomorrow, right? You have the next night. And so you have this, there's this certain kind of ease in the back of the mind of, I'm going to give everything I've got to be honest and fresh in this moment. But if things don't work out because you're a human being, because there's a dynamic with the audience that sometimes works, sometimes doesn't, that you've got tomorrow and you're going to give it your 100% tomorrow. So I love that. I find that just thrilling and exciting, and I never fatigue of that. Never. In my older age, even, you give me a big, juicy role, I can, it's like running a marathon. I can go for days. I just don't go fast there, but I go for longevity. I can go the whole, you know, gamut of time. TV, you have, if you are lucky to have a situation where the director loves to rehearse a little bit, and ask you questions. I was very lucky on Homeland with the wonderful directors there. Mandy Patinkin, my acting partner in the scenes, we did rehearse. It was great. And they gave me such respect and such time of like, how do you feel about this? Do you want to do this again? Should we? And even when you're filming, you don't get a lot of rehearsal, but you get a little bit. And they did honor that process. And then when you film it, you know, Leslie, she would ask me, do you want to do this again? I think I've got the take. I've got what we need, but do you want to do this again? And it was great. So you sometimes get that. But more often than not, especially on episodic television, you gotta be in the game when it's time, because there's a lot of money, and they're wonderful people, and they're all trying to respect and honor the actors there, but they got a timetable, right? So you gotta memorize in your own blankets or your own, you know, little pod. And you got to hope that you bring your magic, whatever it is that makes you the actor that you are. You got to hope you bring that to the game when it's your turn. And when I say when it's your turn, when those cameras are on you, because you're going to do it many times, those scenes. So the act of memorizing, even if you didn't have it that great to begin with when you started, at some point you're going to get it memorized because you're going to be doing many takes from many sides, many scenes. But the problem is sometimes you're the first on camera, sometimes you're last on camera. And so that, you know, if you're first on camera and you're not, and I've had that a couple of times when I'm shaky with the lines. It's not a great feeling, because I personally am not brave enough to just say, okay, just go for it. If you have to make up words, you know, the script person's going to come and say, you said this and you should say that. You said this. Because on films, you can, on certain films and certain maybe HBO and different series, there's a bit of nuance of like you can change things. But on most network TV and other TV, you want to keep to exact of the script, because they need to have references of where they cut from, and they can't have too many things that are not matching, right? So I've had, you know, so when the camera's been on me and I haven't had them memorizing, I haven't had the time with the script, and I need time. It's been hard, and I've seen, you can see it. You're not in it. You can see the actor. It's fine. It's serviceable, but it's not fantastically interesting. At least me as an actor, I'm not fantastically interesting unless I really know what I'm saying.
I always think you're fantastically interesting. So, you know, that's interesting. So there's a difference between the, not necessarily the production process, but that at least onset feeling when it's an episodic television show, as opposed to something like, let's say, the work you did on American Gods, things like that. Is it different at their production level, or is it the schedule different, or?
Like for American Gods, that was just such a beautiful experience. Number one, as it came down, I was the first scene in episode 3. But when we started, that scene, which is a 7-minute scene, which is unheard of, really. So that's part of it. You've got this longevity of time, which takes 2 days to do that scene. You know, it was at least 2, maybe 2.5 days, because there's other locations. And you have one other actor. So it's the gift as well, right? Because then it's just focused on the two of you. And it was supposed to be the first scene of the first episode. So when we got there, we had the producer, the director show me the storyboard. So, you know, we had a meeting before we even went on set. So we're talking about it. They were excited. It was a new series off those amazing books, Neil Gaiman. There was an excitement of let's do this right. Let's have the time. This character you never know might come back, but we're introducing the idea of this world. And so there was just a lot invested in that scene. And that's why I had a lot of time with it as well. We wanted to make sure we got it right. But also, it's just a fantastically interesting scene. So, you know, you have to have... I don't want to give things away, but you have yourself when you're dead, and yourself looking at yourself when you're alive, or when you're the ghost or whatever. And then we had to go into this fantasy of where she's going off to, which was a long sequence and quite fun to do. So the memorizing of that was easy because I knew that it was just the two of us. And I knew that she was the main character in that scene, right? So hers was important. Now, whether or not I did everything I would have done had I had more time with it, probably not. As I look at it, I'm like, yeah, again, I know the moments when I was like, yes, I remember being so grounded in a thought there. And that's why that moment is great. And there are other moments in it when I watch it and I'm like, I could have done better. I could have been a little bit more grounded, a little bit more real. I could have been a little more nuanced, but it was still great fun to do, and it was a wonderful character. So that memorizing was not what is typical for television.
That's so interesting. Yeah. And that really is, it's such a wonderful scene.
Thank you.
I love that scene. So one last question. Mm-hmm. Are there lines from roles that you've done over time that seem to stay accessible to your memory long after the production is done?
You know, I think, like if you said, you know, give me a line from Twelfth Night, I might be able to do that. I've done it 4 times, Olivia. Will it be great, my delivery? No. if you said, give me a line from Masterclass, I probably could. There are other favorite things I've done. I mean, I've been very blessed in terms of the roles I've done that I would count other things just as favorite. And I did a one-woman show, which knocked my butt. You know, it was so hard and it was so frightening. Memorizing, talk about memorizing. It was called Nine Parts of Desire. It was about nine different Iraqi women. I did it at the Wilma Theater in Philadelphia with this wonderful director, Kate Saxon, who was so patient, but we both learned a lot about the nature of sometimes certain actors and certain processes, because she's so brilliant and smart, and she was trying to give me things, knowing that I was kind of like not getting there fast. She was giving me more ideas and more ideas and more ideas. And then what we both realized, and I had to say, I said, Kate, I think I'm not communicating to you that I'm hearing everything you're saying, but I'm battling what you're saying with getting the language in my body. So you have to trust that that's in there. All of these wonderful things, these directorial ideas, they're in my mind. They're not going to ever go away. Now I have to just get it in my body. And part of that is memorizing. Part of that is, like you were mentioning, you know, you have movement that connects with language that makes it easier, especially if you're doing nine different characters. You've got to position, like, who is this character? What's that body language? What's this one? One is an 8-year-old. One is an old beggar lady. You know, you have a lot of different things to get through. And later on, she and I are great friends still. She said, you know, Jacqueline, I realized you taught me something, because when she came back to see it after I had been performing it for a while, you know, certain characters popped and certain characters still needed work. And the ones that still needed work were the ones I rushed at, where I rushed with, okay, let's just get something. And so this was the first idea thrown about who Layla was. And what happened was I had to backtrack my learning in order to get something more solid for her, because I was just doing a thing as opposed to being grounded in this character. And she recognized that too. And she said, you know, it's a beautiful learning experience for me, that sometimes you have to trust that the actor has it and they just need time, and that I don't need to keep pushing because I don't see it. I need to trust that it's in the brain. And it was through communication from both of us that we learned all this, and which was great. But had I had 3 more weeks. So by the time we ended, I was so comfortable and not scared anymore every time I was on stage. And I was so fond of the fullness of three of these characters. And I was waiting for filling up the 6 other characters, but I had no more time with the production. And we almost went with that production to the Arena stage. They wanted to take us there. Something happened and we didn't go, our production didn't go. But had I had 3 more weeks, 4 more weeks, I know I would have, you know. And the memorizing part, that would have been in the back of my brain, and the characters would have been in the forefront. But before I, and now you see I blab on, before I forget, I did want to mention one thing. You know what I find fascinating in terms of memorizing is when I have to play a character with a different language. And what happens, which is fascinating, is you're memorizing through music. Basically, the language that you're not familiar with has to become sounds, like a musical something. I don't know how to describe it, but for me, it's like music. So like there's a passage in Masterclass where she's playing Maria Callas's is playing Lady Macbeth. And when the famous letter, you know, whenever you read a letter in opera, you speak it, you don't sing it. And so she's doing the letter in Italian. It's Verdi, and she's doing it in Italian. And so when I memorized that, after I had had it over and over and over again, because that's a language, you know, it's not my first, second, third language. I know what I'm saying, but that was in much more dynamically in my brain than anything else, because I had to learn the music of it. It wasn't English, you know. So that stayed in longer than the other passages, which was fascinating. When I just did on Archive 81, I had, there's this new language that these characters, my character, was an old witch's language. And I had, it was based in old Gaelic and Irish and Old English. So I had to learn it. I had to learn it phonetically. I had to, they gave me all the tools to learn it. And that was in my brain so well. Everybody was like, how did you memorize that? But it became, and I used it to show another TV audition that I could speak this kind of Gaelic language. And as soon as I looked at it again, so like, if you tell me, can you do it now? No. But if I looked at it and I went over it once, I have it memorized again, because again, it's music. And yeah. And upcoming, I have this wonderful season 2 of The Old Man that we're going to start in March through the summer. And this wonderful character, her character was as a young person at the very last episode, the older person, because it's a series that these main characters, you see them young and older. And when I go back to do it, you're going to see more of the old lady, and I'm going to be speaking Dari, which is the Afghan language, that one of their primary languages, that's based in Farsi. It's a branch of Farsi. And that's not a language that's in my, obviously in my, I speak Armenian. I understand it very well, but so I can learn languages. That's just great. So I have that capacity in my brain to understand languages, but I'm going to learn it like music. As I'm learning the language itself, I'm learning the verbs, I'm learning all that, but I have a feeling the memorizing, which is going to be a big feat, I'm going to have to memorize it as music, as passages, like Shakespeare, kind of, you know, you have like a, you memorize the sentence within the music. And obviously you have to know what you're saying, because that's going to help you remember it. But, anyway, I find it fascinating that when I have to learn languages, there's a different way the memorizing goes, and some ways lasts longer.
That's fascinating. Yeah. That's really fascinating. And I totally agree. And even with the referencing Shakespeare, I've always felt that memorizing Shakespeare is actually easier.
Yeah.
And I think it is because of the meter, because it has a musical quality to it. And it's interesting that you've brought up music a few times. You talking about learning the piano piece and then how it's more difficult if you have music in front of you, because you've kind of, you know, you've embedded that into muscle memory. And I think it's you, but then you also mentioned with the one woman show, where you felt like once you had memorized the lines and kind of embedded that memorization, you were able to move on further. And I think that's fascinating. It's amazing kind of the things that we can do. And then, you know, you will be asked to do a brand new project. You know, let's say that you've spent all this time, you know, memorizing and developing these roles, and then this thing is done. You know, it's like a sandcastle that that you've built, and you've with finesse and made changes, and then, you know, that performance part of it goes away, and then you have to do something brand new.
Yeah.
And your brain is able to set those things aside and be open to learning new things, which is pretty amazing.
It's true. And there's a mourning process too, you know, after you've spent so much time and energy and emotion within either a show or a character, especially like a one-woman show, or especially like a Maria Callas, or any of the big, you know, big, wonderful, juicy roles that you might be fortunate enough to try. There's a mourning process, and it's fascinating, you know. In some ways, it's with the brain as well. The brain is like, how come we're not doing this anymore? How come we're not saying these words? Why are you telling me to close the door? You know, yeah. But that's another, and that's for another podcast in terms of the emotional residue of doing a role. You know, you find yourself kind of taking on the residue of what the character goes through in your daily life, even though you've kept it, you know, even though you're smart enough to know that's one thing to the other, because your mind knows that was a character, you're you, it's a different situation, but your body has just gone through all that emotional upheaval. When I did Amelia in Othello, you know, she's the last half hour of the show at 10:30 at night, you're going through a car crash because she's saying, you did what? What happened? And you know, you're a liar. You did, you know, she's trying to make everything right. So your body has gone through this like literal trauma for a half hour every night at 10:30 to 11 because it's a 3-hour play. And the residual of that is still in your body the next morning when you wake up, like you've been through, you know what I mean? So you just have, there's that to deal with too. You're dealing with how to cope with the chemical balance of going through emotional trauma every night. It's probably why actors drink a lot.
I actually wrote down emotional residue. I love that. That's a marvelous way to describe that.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you so much. Thank you for asking me, and thank you for being such a lovely host. I do.
That's it for this episode. Special thanks to my guest, Jacqueline Antaramian. I'm working on an episode that began as feedback that I received from my very first show sent to me by a listener using the Anchor messaging tool, and you could do the same by visiting the link in the tool or by going to the podcast homepage. Both links are available in the show notes. You will also find links to various ways to connect with the show through social media, but if you'd rather send me a plain old-fashioned email, you can contact host@dubiouspod.show. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Dubious Scrapbooks. I realize that my production schedule is a little inconsistent, but I'm trying to get to a regular once a month schedule. Until next time, take care and don't believe everything you think.